desire and interest in your attention this afternoon. It felt like at one time I thought I understood what this phrase was all about, or to some extent anyway. And last Sunday, not yesterday, but a week ago, felt like the Lord had given me a message about this verse, Romans 12 and 20. It says, therefore, if thine enemy hunger, feed him. If he thirst, give him drink. For in so doing, thou shalt heap coals of fire on his head. And I thought that the message the Lord had given me was about the application of the food and the drink. And I got up to share it with the congregation. Don't know how this came across to them, but it seemed like the Lord opened up something to me while I was standing there that I've never quite had opened up to me before. I'd like to share that with you today, if I may. This verse, as a young person, I seemed to think that this was an avenue where there was a chance of causing someone else to be fully come to grips with the damage that they had done to me. It says, if you have an enemy and he's hungry, feed him. If he's thirsty, give him something to drink. For if you're able to do that, you'll heap coals of fire on his head. Now, we all know what coals of fire will do for us. Causes pain, causes disfiguration. It causes us to be injured. Thinking about who the enemy is, the dictionary definition says it's a foe, an adversary. A private enemy is one who hates another and wishes him injury or attempts to do him injury to gratify his own malice or ill will. An enemy is someone that has ill will toward us. And I don't know how many of us here today feel like you have an enemy, or maybe in the past you feel like you've had an enemy. But I'd venture to say that all of us have felt like we had an enemy at some point or another in our life. I feel like I've had some. I haven't had anyone threaten to take my life, although I've had someone to intimidate me that seemed to have a intent to do me harm. And I know that it's not a very pleasant situation. You ask yourself, how am I supposed to react to them? And you ask yourself, as a Christian, what am I supposed to do? So you think of this verse. If you've got an enemy, you feed him. You give him something to drink and then sit back and watch the fire. Is that right? Well, I think of the verse in 2 Corinthians, the 10th chapter and the 4th verse. He says, for the weapons of our warfare are not carnal, but mighty through God to the pulling down of strongholds. You know, a literal warfare is one where everything is pretty much fair game. If we can starve out the enemy, if we can cause him to become so thirsty that he becomes desperate, then that's part of warfare. That's the enemy out there. We're trying to overcome the enemy. And I believe that there's victory in these kind of situations, but it's deeper, much deeper than just doing nice things to someone else to the point that they feel obligated to confess that they've been harboring ill will towards you. It's deeper than that. It's deeper than me offering to prepare food and give some kind of refreshments to someone that has been my enemy to the point that they feel self-conscious about their actions or their deeds. It's deeper than that. So, as I began to think about this, I had to go back to the very beginning of the 12th chapter of Romans, and it says here, I beseech you therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your body a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable unto God, which is your reasonable service. So this seems to be a tone of us completely being in subjection or surrendering, as we heard last night. And as I consider the tone that's put out in Romans 12 and 1, I skip down to the 9th verse. He says here, let love be without dissimulation. Abhor that which is evil, cleave to that which is good. To let our love be without any kind of fakeness, without any kind of hypocriticalness, but to be genuine love. He says, let love be without dissimulation. Dissimulation is a word that means hiding under a false pretense. It's assuming a false or a counterfeit appearance. It's something that conceals the real or original purpose. So let love be without anything that would dismantle the real purpose of focus of love. He goes on to say, be kindly affectioned one to another with brotherly love, in honor, preferring one another. Not slothful in business, fervent in spirit, serving the Lord, rejoicing in hope, patient in tribulation, continuing instant in prayer, distributing to the necessity of the saints, given to hospitality, bless them which persecute you. Now this is starting to get real close here. To bless them which persecute you. Bless and curse not. Rejoice with them that do rejoice, and weep with them that weep. Be not the same mind one toward another. Mind not high things, but condescend to men of low estate. Be not wise in your own conceits. Recompense to no man evil for evil, and provide things honest in the sight of all men. And if, that's a conditional word, if it be possible, as much as lieth in you, live peaceably with all men. Dearly beloved, avenge not yourselves, but rather give place to wrath. There's some real instruction here, and I think about what was Paul basing the things he was saying on. And I have to go back to Matthew, the 5th chapter, and recognize that, notice what he said here in Matthew chapter 5, Jesus speaking at the Sermon on the Mount. The 17th verse here says, recompense to no man evil for evil, provide things honest in the sight of all men. So notice what Jesus said over here in Matthew 5 and 38. Ye have heard that it has been said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth, but I say unto you, resist not evil. But whosoever shall smite thee on the right cheek, turn to him the other also. And if any man will sue thee at the law to take away thy coat, let him have thy cloak also. And whosoever shall compel thee to go a mile, go with him twain. Give to him that asketh thee, and from him that would borrow of thee, turn not thou away. Ye have heard that it has been said, thou shalt love thy neighbor and hate thine enemy. But I say unto you, love your enemies, bless them that curse you, do good to them that hate you, and pray for them which despitefully use you and persecute you. that ye may be the children of your Father which is in heaven, for he maketh his sun to rise on the evil and on the good, and sendeth the rain on the just and on the unjust. This whole concept of loving your enemies and blessing them that curse you and doing good to them that hate you and pray for them which despitefully use you and persecute, this is something that goes against our flesh, to say the very least. He said here, recompense, Paul says, recompense to no man evil for evil. Provide things honest in the sight of all men. And if it's possible, as much as lieth in you, live peaceably with all men. So it's almost like he's saying there is maybe some that you're not going to be able to live peaceably with, to some extent. So who is it that you can't live peaceably with? That'd be your enemy, wouldn't it? And he goes on down and says, dearly beloved, avenge not yourselves, but rather give place to wrath. I was thinking, Lord, how do I explain what it means to give place to wrath? It doesn't mean to make a special day that you allow wrath to exercise itself. I can't accept that. I was thinking about giving place to wrath, and how many of us, when we hear the siren going and we see lights flashing in our rearview mirror, how many of us realize that we need to pull over and get out of the way? And here comes the emergency vehicle by us, and we give a place for it. I'd like to challenge us here with this thought about giving place to wrath. You're going to have to get yourself out of the way and let it go on by. Not allow it to come and take up residence in your heart and in your life. He says, vengeance is mine, I will repay, saith the Lord. Therefore, if thine enemy hunger, feed him, and if he thirst, give him drink, for in so doing thou shalt heap coals of fire on his head. It seems like that he is telling us how to deal with those situations and those that we can't live peaceably with. It seems like he's telling us what to do, but how does this all come to pass? How does it play out? It's been a real question in my mind. Don't you think it would be a violation of the gospel to provide a way to get even with our enemies, even if it was just in our own mind? It seems like it would be to me. To provide an avenue where I can know that because I gave them something to eat and something to drink, that they're having to have some consequences in their life. There's some fire fell on them over here. And if they don't realize it, at least I do. And that I'm getting some satisfaction out of that. I think that that would be a violation of what the Scripture teaches us to have. I believe that would be some love with dissimulation. It'd be some fakeness there. It'd be some hollowness. It wouldn't be sincere. It wouldn't really be loving mankind how we ought to. So what is this verse telling us to do? How is it really supposed to play out? What's he really talking about? I believe that the food and the drink are things of satisfying appetites and refreshment. I'd like for us to go to another place where there's some coals involved. I'll try to share with you the inspiration that I feel like the Lord give us about this verse. In Romans, the 12th chapter, the 20th verse is where we're talking about. But I'd like for us to go over to the book of Isaiah. I'd like to start in the first verse of the 6th chapter. And notice a vision that the prophet had. It says, in the year that King Uzziah died, I saw also the Lord sitting upon a throne high and lifted up, and his train filled the temple. Above it stood the seraphims. Each one had six wings. With twain he covered his face, and with twain he covered his feet, and with twain he did fly. And one cried unto another and said, Holy, holy, holy is the Lord of hosts. The whole earth is full of his glory. And the post of the door moved at the voice of him that cried, and the house was filled with smoke. Then said I, Woe is me, for I am undone, because I am a man of unclean lips. And I dwell in the midst of a people of unclean lips, for mine eyes have seen the King, the Lord of hosts. Now, Isaiah had a vision here of something that was transpiring, at least in his mind's eye. And he caught a glimpse of what it was like to be in the presence of God, I believe. And he began to feel so insignificant and so small in this vision, in this presence. And he says, I'm just a man of unclean lips, and I dwell in the midst of a people of unclean lips. And mine eyes have seen the King, the Lord of hosts. And then in the sixth verse he says, Then flew one of the seraphims unto me, having a live coal in his hand, which he had taken with the tongs from off of the altar. And he laid it upon my mouth and said, Lo, this hath touched thy lips, then thine iniquity is taken away, and thy sin is purged. Also I heard the voice of the Lord saying, Whom shall I send, and who shall go, will go for us? Then said I, Here am I, send me. Isaiah caught in his vision a glimpse of one of the seraphims going to the altar and taking a live coal from off of that altar and bringing it. And there was a purging and a cleansing thing that happened there. It happened to his lips, to the words that he would say. He said, I'm a man of unclean lips. I dwell in the midst of a people of unclean lips. But this coal that came off of the altar, and this altar was one that had a fire that was intended to be perpetual. I believe if we do some research that God started this fire, this literal fire in the altar in Old Testament worship, and the priest's duty was to keep it going. And he caught a vision of an altar in the presence of the Lord, that he took a coal off of that altar and brought it to Isaiah's lips. And when it touched his lips in his vision, then there was a cleansing and there was a purging that happened. And as that happened, then there was the call. There was a beckoning to Isaiah that he needs someone to go and to speak. And he said, I heard the voice of the Lord saying, Whom shall I send, and who will go for us? Then said I, Here am I, send me. Isaiah then was in a place where there had been a cleansing, there had been something that had changed in his person, in his character, where he could be utilized by the Lord. He could be utilized as an instrument for the Lord because of this live coal. And as I was thinking about this, I was thinking, Lord, what's the difference in this coal and the one that is talked about there in the 12th chapter of Romans? You know, many times when we recognize that we have someone that either feels like or really is our enemy, many times how we conduct ourselves either opens an avenue whereby the Lord can deal with them, or it closes the avenue off. And I was thinking how important it is for me to be able to provide the nourishment, the maybe gratifying an appetite to some extent, and maybe providing some refreshment, showing some kindness, consideration, an avenue whereby the Lord can be able to put His coal upon their head. You know, there is no way to change an enemy to the point that they can cohabitate with you and be in fellowship with you unless their thinking is changed. Unless they begin to think differently than they think right now, you're not going to be able to change the status of whether this individual is an enemy or not. Have you ever tried to change someone's thinking? I'll tell you, you won't be very successful. You're not very capable. I'm not very capable of changing the way someone thinks. But there is someone, there is an entity that we are acquainted with that can change the thinking of enemies. And that's the Spirit of God. That's the only thing that will ever change that. Lord, help me to be in a place. I feel so oppressed and so overwhelmed sometimes with the idea of contending with things that are enemies to me personally. And you do too. You have things that feels like it's coming against you. And you want to take some kind of strategic action to protect yourself, to overcome that force of the enemy. And I find here in the 12th chapter of Romans in the 20th verse, he says here, if your enemy is hungry, if he is desiring something, it may look like he's just going to consume it on his own fleshly appetites, on his own interests. Lord, help me to be able to feed him, to open up a path where the Lord can come down and be able to change his thinking. Isaiah's lips were touched so that he could be of service to the Lord. You know, our enemies need to be touched so they can be service to the Lord. If we feed them, if we're able to give them something to drink, something that's refreshing, I believe we can pave a way. We can open an avenue where the Spirit of God can reach them. Thinking about enemies being changed in the day that we live in, I'd like to turn a page or two here in Isaiah to the 11th chapter. Begin looking at the first verse. He says, there shall come forth a rod out of the stem of Jesse, and a branch shall grow out of his roots. And the Spirit of the Lord shall rest upon him, and the Spirit of wisdom and understanding, the Spirit of counsel and might, the Spirit of knowledge and of the fear of the Lord. And shall make him of quick understanding in the fear of the Lord, and he shall not judge after the sight of his eyes, neither reprove after the hearing of his ears. I believe he's talking about Jesus. It says, but with righteousness shall he judge the poor, and reprove with equity for the meek of the earth. And he shall smite the earth with the rod of his mouth, and with the breath of his lips shall he slay the wicked. The very word of Jesus overthrows and overpowers the forces of sin. And he says here that he's going to smite the earth with the rod of his mouth. God's law spoken through the lips of Jesus, through his word, his Sermon on the Mount, is a rod that sets things in order. It puts order to this chaos that sin wants to bring in people's lives. And he says, and righteousness shall be the girdle of his loins, and faithfulness the girdle of his reins. The wolf also shall dwell with the lamb. Now that is not possible without a mind change. The wolf and the lamb will not cohabitate together without there being some coals off of the altar applied to the wolf's mind. It says, and the leopard shall lie down with the kid, and the calf and the young lion and the fatling together, and a little child shall lead them. We could read some more here. I believe Isaiah has caught a vision here of what it's going to be like in the gospel day and what's going to be available. But there is some thinking that's changed in these natural enemies to one another. When the wolf and the lamb are able to cohabitate together, there's been a major change in the head, in the thinking. And there was the avenue somehow has been opened where that the spirit can deal with the what's going on inside of the mind and inside of the thinking. So I have to go back to the verse that we started with in Romans, the 12th chapter and the 20th verse. When I read the whole chapter, I recognize that there is no way that the Lord would approve of us having some kind of vindictive spirit about showing kindness to someone that would be our enemy. But He has a real purpose in us, providing things that would be beneficial to our enemies as opening an avenue whereby His Spirit can deal with their thinking and change that to where they can be utilized by Him in His kingdom. I think how important it is for me to get a hold of the whole picture of what God requires out of me to be able to portray a willingness to be considerate, to be kind, to be compassionate, even though this person, they may be a very vocal person, they may have proclaimed themselves to be our enemy, and it may be a very subtle thing. It may be something that we perceive, it may be something that we feel that this is what's happening, that they're really our enemy, and they're really not my friend, but they're really my enemy. May the Lord help me to know how to extend a compassion and a consideration, something that would allow them to be actually nourished or refreshed by our presence, by our interaction with them, so that it can open an avenue, a pathway, where the Spirit can actually deal with their thinking, their mindset that causes us to feel this friction. So may the Lord help me with that. I'm thinking maybe to bring our little thought to a close quickly in Proverbs, the 16th chapter. In the 7th verse, he says, when a man's ways please the Lord, he maketh his enemies to be at peace with him. When a man's ways please the Lord, when a man's ways are willing to provide the food, to provide the drink, to be able, there's an avenue that's opened up to where the enemies can be at peace. Not just some kind of tense silence, but more than that. It's more than just no chaos going on right now. I believe this peace is something that is it's deep, it's real. It's not some kind of facade. The Lord wants our enemies to be able to be at peace with us. And for that to happen, our ways must please the Lord. If my ways please the Lord, then I believe the Lord's going to expect me to be able to provide food, to provide drink, something that will open the avenue where the Spirit of the Lord can deal with their mind, with their thinking, where that can be changed, where that old carnivorous nature of the wolf can be changed. It's not natural for a wolf to lie down with something that should have been lunch. But there has to be a real change in the mind, a real change in the thinking, a real change in the character. And that can only happen when the coals from off of the altar of the Lord, the Spirit of God, being able to deal in that mind and in that heart and in that character. So I find me as an individual, how am I able? How do I fit myself in there? I think we have to ask the Lord, Lord, is this a place where I can provide some food, so I can provide some refreshment, so I can help open up the way. This person, this situation seems toxic. It seems contentious. There's enemy forces. There's evil forces at work. What do I do here to break? We say break the ice. Maybe it's put out the fire. What do I do here to allow an avenue? It looks like I'm letting this person get away with it. It looks like I'm feeding an appetite. It looks like I'm giving refreshment to the very forces that's coming against me. Lord, help me to be in a place where I can open up that avenue for the coals of the off of the altar can be applied to the thinking of the one that maybe has set out to be my enemy, that has set themselves in a position to be contentious with me. I desire your prayers because I recognize that there's no place for me. There's no place for me to be contentious with my enemies. There's no place for me to sit back and watch someone smolder because the Lord is putting some kind of consequence on my enemy. There's no place for me to do that and really have love without dissimulation in my heart and in my spirit. But I tell you, folks, I want to see some real changes in character. I want to see some real changes in thinking. I want to see those natures that are incompatible because of the things that's happened maybe in the past, maybe the disappointments, maybe because of rejection, maybe because of injuries. I don't know all the factors here, but if there's things that have caused people to be at odds, I believe there's a way through the Spirit of God where that can come together, where the enemies can be at peace with one another. If we're able to convert a enemy, I believe it's possible to make friends out of them, isn't it? May the Lord help us. You pray for me.